I guess the big question is, what happens with the A-League Grand Final, Lockie? It's Grand Final week. We don't even know if it's happening this week and at which ground.
It kind of sounds like we need an expert opinion on this, doesn't
it? I think so.
You mentioned the phrase big fixtures before, and we have a big fixture joining us on the line right now. None other than Fox Sports' Adam Peacock. Adam, a warm welcome to you.
Big fixture. I'm walking around suburbia in Sydney at night while my son's at his training session, and I'm wearing tracksuit pants and a hoodie.
Well, you're a big fixture to us, Adam. It means a lot. But you were across all of the action from the weekend, Sydney and Melbourne City both booking their spots in the A-League Grand Final. Does it have a sense of irony to you that after this wondrous season we've had that's been oh so competitive, we end up with the two Grand Finalists from last year?
A little bit of irony in that. In the sense that, okay, we're back to, it seems, where we were last season, but the way we got there was totally different. The way that the young players have come out, I saw a stat from Andrew Howe, the king of stats, call him, in Australian football, saying that 40% of goals have been scored by young players, young Australian players, this final series. That never happened before. So that's a little snapshot of what has happened for the entirety of the season. These young players have got a chance, and best possible actual situation that's occurred was yesterday's semi-final with those two young boys up front for Melbourne City who've come in because they've got their opportunity with other guys either injured or away, and they take them with some brilliant football. So that, for me, has been the highlight, and that is what I'm looking forward to on the weekend. What younger player, because Sydney have been robbed of their depth as well, what younger player is going to stand up and make a name for himself to put a cap on this season, what has been the season of the young player?
Well, Adam, Melbourne City have essentially been forced to turn to Kolakowski and Tilio and Rafael Borges Rodriguez in the absence of their Socceroos contingent and Craig Noon getting injured in the warm-up over the weekend. I actually think, given the form of Tilio and Kolakowski, you know, it's obviously tough to replace a guy like Jamie McLaren, but I haven't knocked them down, you know, as many pegs as I thought I might based on the performance on the weekend.
Well, that was the unknown when those two that we thought we were going to lose in the boot and McLaren up front for Melbourne City were going to go with the Socceroos. It turned out that Andrew Nambut injured himself, so he didn't go, but he's still out. And Craig Noon injured himself, and he's got issues. And Nathaniel Atkinson, thankfully for City, has come back in and given a bit of depth there, even though he's been used as a right-back early in the season. But the great unknown, it wasn't a given that they'd lose a lot, but the assumption was that they're going to struggle a bit more than they ordinarily would without those guys. And what would Tilio and Kolakowski bring? Well, yesterday, against a couple of damn good defenders in Milligan and also Shushnyar and Franjic on the right, even though he started on the left, caused them problems. So, yeah, they fit in well, and they didn't lose anything there. Right, to be seen what happens in the grand final.
And there was they haven't just been making waves on the pitch, off it as well, because there was that great roundtable discussion that you, Bozza, Harps had with the two of them. It's great to see these young players coming through, not just showing what they can do on the park, but showing a real zeal off it in front of the camera as well.
Yeah, that's important. Absolutely important to connect with people their age. I'm way beyond that. You're a lot closer than me to their ages, but to have that relatability to a lot of young players involved in Australian football, that's really important, and to have that personality. And Kolakowski has a bit about him. Obviously, he did something he probably shouldn't have late in that game when he started carrying on a bit, but I think Tilio's a bit more reserved, but we need those bigger characters who won't mind coming on and showing a bit.
Tilio really excites me, Adam, not just for City's grand final chances, but going forward as a real developmental prospect. I mean, Kolakowski is kind of more of a straightforward play, very exciting, but gets in behind, scores goals, whereas Tilio is just so creative. He, the Arzani comparison is probably a lazy one, and whenever I try and hype this kid up on Twitter, I get people telling me, it's a small sample size, Arzani's got too big for his boots, look where he is now. But I'm just so excited by Tilio. There was one touch against Victory in the last regular season game where he did a little Iniesta move but also controlled the ball with it. It was his first touch at the same time and left Adama Traore for dead. I just think he's something else.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's obviously got improvement, and Melbourne City know his faults more than ever, or more than anyone, and they're working on those faults to get him out of his game. We don't see him regularly enough in training to pick apart those faults and have a discussion about it. But what we do see is a very talented footballer, and a footballer that Sydney FC, we now know why Sydney FC weren't happy at all when he left. They were filthy that he left to go down to Melbourne City. They thought that, okay, you're going to be in an environment where you're training with the best of the best in the A-League, and Ninkovic is that, and, you know, Bob Johan's a pretty good player, and Caceres and Bratton and all those guys, thinking that, yeah, you just be patient, you're going to get your time, you're going to get your time. But obviously what Melbourne City put in front of him on their brochure was much more appealing, and now we can see why Sydney were filthy. And yeah, this kid, I actually bumped into one of his ex-school coaches in the crowd yesterday, and he was at school playing in an open competition, so with year 12 boys. He was in year 8 and carving. He was sent out there. He was the runt of the litter, like he is pretty much now, but still he was carving up when he was giving 4 years to some boys in high school. So yeah, you can see there's obvious talent there. It'll be exciting to see where he ends up, but hopefully the next few career choices that he makes are the best for his football and nothing else. Because you can see that Daniel Arzani, he's made a couple of career choices. Maybe it's not his fault. Maybe it is his fault. Maybe it's his agent. Not sure. But they haven't worked out for him. Okay, he got a bad ACL. But hopefully a guy like Tilio can get the right minutes at the right club in the next 2 to 3 years to see him really end up. Who knows where he'll end up.
Well, it was that dynamic duo that got Melbourne City their spot in the grand final at the expense, of course, of MacArthur. What did you make, looking back on the Bulls' first season in the A-League? What have you made of them and their controversial
Yeah,
cowbells?
Pretty good. Yeah, the cowbells are an interesting welcome to Campbelltown when you live where I live in Sydney and you've got to drive 2 hours to get to their ground. It's not exactly the one thing that you want to listen to when you rock up, but that's the way it goes. Yeah, they've been good. I've grown more fond of them as the season's gone on. It was like, okay, Campbelltown, it is basically a growing area. I think there's the demographic is that there's about 150 people a week move into that area to settle out there, because the greater Sydney area, closer to CBD, is too expensive and people want a bit of fresh air out there. But it's growing and they're ambitious. I mean, they've got Davila next season. Looks like they got Craig Noon. They're pretty keen on Danny De Silva. That might be announced soon as well. I think the players that they got there this season, Mark Milligan's obviously going. I'm not entirely sure how many of their foreign contingent will stick around for their second season, but they've got a coach who knows what he's doing backwards. They've got a staff who knows what they're doing. They've got a front office who are kind of growing into the job and working it all out from an A-League perspective. I think it's a pretty good look. Look, put it this way. The way that Western United are going at the moment as a club and the way that MacArthur are going, I think MacArthur are a step or two ahead.
Well, Adam, the challenge for all these new expansion clubs is finding some sort of identity. And I mean, yeah. MacArthur playing in all whites, outspending the competition and pinching talent, hoovering up talent from their competitors. It's almost the Campbelltown Galacticos they're assembling for next year.
Little bit. I'm not sure. The word Galacticos probably doesn't get bounced around in Campbelltown too often. Truth be told, but they do have an identity. They've got their crowd's got an identity with the cowbells. Someone ripped a flare last night, and some of their fans started punching on. You don't really have an identity as a fan group until you start doing that in the A-League. So, no. But in all seriousness, with the football, they've got an academy that they're building out there. They've got some land they're going to build there, and they're going to have an imprint in the community, which is good. They don't really have that on a day-to-day basis at the moment because they train at Fairfield, but which is a bit in. It's like half an hour away from or 45 from Campbelltown, but. The identity is a crucial thing, because we've seen with Western United that there is something there with Western United, but you can't truly have an identity if you don't have a home base. And they need a stadium big style. And that's why I said that MacArthur are a step or two ahead, because mainly based on the fact that there's no damn stadium for Western United to play in at the moment. It's just going to hold them back.
Well, what was the atmosphere like at that semi-final, Adam? Because there was a lot made of the decision by the APL to move the game. A lot of people would have preferred, for the sporting integrity of the competition, for Melbourne City to have played behind closed doors at Amy or tried to find a solution to play it in regional Victoria. But do you think it was worth it to move the game for the crowd that assembled? And certainly the players' families were out in force.
Well, the Tilios liked it because there was about 35 of them there. Kolakowski had a few cousins as well. Look, it was hard. It was like choices M and N, if you want to go down from A, B, C, D and E. It was, in retrospect, probably closed doors would be better, because it for the integrity of it all, for the look of it all, and basically to say to the Victorian government, look, you're being a bit ridiculous here, because the night before, or two nights before, you had 7,000 people sitting on each other's laps an hour out of Melbourne, and you're not going to allow people into this. It's, yeah, hopefully it gets worked out for this week. It wasn't the worst of a bad situation, but it wasn't far off. It just had a bit of an empty feel to it, to be truthful, at Cogra there. But I throw no blame at organisers in a great way about it, because it is so difficult. You're beholden to government decisions and health advice decisions, which are way beyond anyone's control, as we've seen.
Yeah, it was interesting and pretty helpful, actually, to hear Greg O'Rourke sort of rationalise and explain the methodology behind the decision when spoke to him last night.
Yeah, that's the one thing that the league's hopefully going forward, and the FFA haven't been very good at in the past few years, that the explanations to the fan. You can brief the media all you want. You can tell us in a phone call all you want and hope that we get the message out, which happens from time to time. It happens in all walks. But you need to front up. You need to explain in detail to fans and give a rational decision, because 95% of fans will cop the rational decision. They might not agree with it, but it's not like we're dealing with a bunch of idiots who are going to set flame to your car if you don't like the decision. Just explain to it, to get people who invest in your sport on your page and understand why you've made those decisions. And hopefully going forward, Greg O'Rourke and the crew, Greg's a great guy. I just don't think he's been helped a lot over the years, and particularly people who have been running the FFA, about how to communicate properly. Now, the FFA now, or FA, what do you call them, got Peter Philopoulos, who's a good operator. He's going to get the message, and I can already see the messaging from James Johnson from the FA's point of view. There's been a noticeable twist since James has been in the job, which is good, because fans just want to know. And if you don't let them know, they'll just give up or just start paying less attention than what they are. And football, quite frankly, especially the A-League and the W-League, can't afford that in this country.
Yeah, I just don't think, Adam, that people know who Greg O'Rourke is. I don't think people know what the APL is, by and large, outside of this sort of insular media circles we operate in. I see a lot of commentary online saying, oh, this FFA decision is a disgrace, you know,
yeah,
this has nothing to do with it whatsoever. But when Greg O'Rourke actually is put in front of a mic and speaks, I've always been quite impressed by him. I remember, you know, there was I think it was Around the Block did this sort of State of the Game special with some of you guys at Fox and Greg O'Rourke talking about, you know, fan culture and active support and all those sorts of issues. And actually listening to that and listening to him explain the sort of behind the scenes decision-making and the factors at play was incredible and really opened my eyes and made me think that the issues were a lot more complicated than sometimes the fan on the streets or in the stands gives them credit for.
They're almost, over the years, I've found that they're almost too worried about what people think. You can't be that worried. Just go out and tell people what's happening. Mm. It's not like we're dealing with, you know, the briefcase of the codes of the nuclear armament that the US government have. We're talking about football here. It's not that important to everyone's day-to-day livelihoods. It's important for people who play, professional players and the like, but I'm talking about the people who enjoy watching it. And yes, they're so passionate about it, but you can't hide things on a consistent basis. Or not hide. When I say hide, I shouldn't say that. I said not tell. There's a difference between hiding and not telling. Mm. And I think sometimes that football just doesn't tell because, for whatever reason, they don't think it's important enough, or they don't think that the people out there need to hear it or whatever. I think just put as much as you can out there, which in general is a lot, and let people decide for themselves. Like rugby league, for instance, do this thing on a Monday. This is just a small thing. Rugby league, every Monday, Graham Annesley, the guy that runs the competition for the NRL, he gets up there and does a half an hour webinar, basically, on the decisions of the weekend and why they made those decisions. So there's great clarity. It doesn't stop people blowing up, but it adds to the conversation and adds to the understanding of people out there about exactly what's going on. I'd like to see more of it in football at every level, not just in decision-making processes on the field with referees, but other things as well.
Meanwhile, in the A-League, we get moments where we don't even know how long a player is going to be suspended for, like Adama Traore.
Oh, and then when you get the... And then when you get the email to say how long it's been suspended for, you need a frigging master's in law to work out what the language in the email that you're getting. It just should say Adama Traore has been suspended for 4 matches because he did something he shouldn't have, for instance. But, yeah, they go into this great detail and, yeah, speaking another language. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, I think you've got to take this idea and run with it, Adam. Gregor Rourke weekly webinar needs to be a thing. Needs to be a thing. But he did throw up a couple of options with respect to what's going to happen to the upcoming grand final. We know that there's potential to play it in Melbourne and ideally play it in Melbourne in front of a reduced capacity crowd. There's been offers from other states to have the game in a neutral venue. Also thrown up was the idea of delaying the game by a week and potentially giving the chance for some soccerers to come out of quarantine and play in that game.
Yep.
What's your personal preference of all of the options that were thrown up?
The lowest is take it somewhere else. I think you need to, if you can't have it in Melbourne, you have it in Sydney. And if you can't have it in Sydney, then you take it somewhere else. But between all of that, I think anywhere north of 40% crowd capacity allowed in Melbourne, you have it there. If the Victorian government say 25%, you delay it a week, and then you just get the play. I'm sure players are not going to walk away because their contract has expired 3 days before the game from the possibility of playing in a grand final. The tax implications might be a bit difficult with the end of the financial year, so I don't know how you weave through that. But to not have the best possible outcome because you're worried about 3 days of contract would pretty much sum up a lot of things about Australian sport and Australian society at the moment, because it seems that rules supersede common sense 9 times out of 10. I'd do everything you can, bend over backwards, to have at least 40% capacity at Amy Park. And if you can't, delay it a week. And then if your week is still burnt up and you've still got the same situation in Victoria, come up to Sydney and play the game. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Adam. I mean, after moving the semi-final, it would be really harsh to play the grand final in Sydney if we can avoid that at sort of any cost to give Melbourne City the home ground advantage that they've earned and deserved this season. But we haven't spoken much about Sydney FC. What did you make of their performance against Adelaide United? I thought going forward they were a little bit more potent, a little bit more exciting than they have been, and maybe that came at the expense of a little bit of control late in the game, but it wasn't the total typical Sydney FC suffocate the life out of the game kind of performance.
Yeah, it wasn't, because they didn't have Ninkovic, who's their best player on the ball. Who you pass in the ball, it relieves pressure around everyone around it, because you're not going to lose it. Or 95 times out of 100, you're not going to lose it. So that was key. And I think the fact that they had kids on the bench, they didn't have the depth, where ordinarily they've been bringing off a Bumyahan off the bench, for instance, and injecting him on the hour mark. They don't have that option when they've got injuries to Ninkovic and they've got 3 Socceroos away. Paolo Retre adds depth and versatility off the bench if he's not in the starting lineup, or Caceres, for instance, who's maybe on the bench when they want to start with Retre. So I think that was the biggest issue, and they were just happy to get through the game, and it was a little tighter than they would have wanted. 3-0, if Lafondra scores his pen at the end of the section, it could have been 5. So on the whole, I think pretty really impressive performance from Sydney FC, given the circumstances.
Which side do you think sits more comfortable ahead of the grand final after what we saw this weekend?
I think Melbourne City, because they're comfortable in the knowledge that those 2 kids aimed up on the weekend up front, or 3 if you're throwing Atkinson, but Tilio and Kolakowski. I think, Melbourne City, and the intensity that they played at in the second half was just, it replicated what they've done to so many teams this season. So, they for me are favourites going in, regardless of where the game is, in actual fact.
Well, there you go. Lockie, you might be celebrating come this weekend or next.
The only way is up from last grand final.
As long as you don't get a disallowed goal in the first few minutes.
I told you that the full time of that game, I was multiple hoods over my head on the couch for about 30 minutes, didn't move. My parents tried to speak to me, I just, leave me alone, please. We've all been there. But Adam, in whatever way, shape or form the grand final does take, we look forward to the broadcast and you being a big part of it. Thank you very much, as always, for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No worries, guys. Have a good night.